Tonight, we continue our ongoing conversation about the region we live in, and of course, Chicago. One of the issues we've dedicated a few segments to in the past couple months has been segregation. The Metropolitan Planning Council put out a big study about the cost of living apart, not just the people that are living in segregated neighborhoods, but for all the taxpayers in the area. And it has proven over and over that a diverse and integrated city, town, or suburb can lead to a better economic opportunity for all. But if everyone agrees in that statement, well, what can be done about it? Tonight, we start talking about some of the solutions that are popping up to tackle segregation. Studio with me with some examples of how our government hopes to tackle the issue is Marisa Novara. She's a director with Metropolitan Planning Council. She wrote a recent piece about four steps the city has done recently to desegregate. Great to have you back. Good to see you, Marisa. Thanks for being
here. Thanks, Justin. Good to be here.
All right, so let's get into this. We talked a lot about segregation being, something that is holding the city back. And it's great to start talking about the solutions. When we'll get into the four specific steps, but are you surprised that the city has started to move in a direction that sort of takes a look at this issue as something that they need to address?
You know, I think it's something we're seeing coming under the previous administration. Under the Obama administration, this push was even coming from the federal government. And so in some ways, some of the changes that we see were first put in place at the state level, actually. Our state housing development authority was the first to put in place some guidelines to say, you know, we expect to see affordable housing across all neighborhoods, not only in low-income neighborhoods, but mm-hmm. in low-income neighborhoods, high-income neighborhoods, and everything in between. And that comes from a federal law that we sort of took our time implementing. That was actually part of the Fair Housing Act 50 years ago. We just never enforced it until the Obama administration. So
it's 50. It takes about 50 years.
It takes
years,
a few
right?
years, for people to get their heads around this stuff. So President Obama really pushed that, and we started to see some movement coming from the federal government, and that trickled down, I think, first to the state level, and now we're definitely seeing some push for that across the board in the city of Chicago and in other parts of the region.
When you're dealing with big societal issues like segregation, this is kind of an ignorant question in the sense that how much do political forces help that or get in the way of that? I mean, we talk about a new administration that's in that may not have the same values as the last, and you talked about it being 50 years since the Fair Housing, and I'm sure that has been interpreted in many different ways by different presidents and different administrations. How much does political beliefs and values get in the way of something like integration or desegregation?
I would say it's 99% of the issue in some cases. I mean, it's really a question of, in some ways, what you believe to be the role of government and versus what you believe to be the role of much smaller, either individuals or groups of people to make decisions, right? And I think something that we see out of the current administration is a view that perhaps having some opinions about where people should be able to live, that's viewed with some suspicion. And I think that's unfortunate because in actuality, the way that cities like Chicago became set up the way that they are in terms of the high level of racial and economic segregation is that people made incredibly deliberate decisions about where people
right.
could live.
Right.
And nothing about that was organic or happened by accident. And so to act as if it's somehow now problematic to make some very deliberate decisions to change that is, you know, at best disingenuous and at worst a lot worse.
Yeah, right. It always makes me think about, you know, as we've had the conversations you were on a couple months ago and even Alden and others come in and talk about the cost of segregation, what it does to the city, that you recognize over time that more and more people agree with that. They'll agree with the concept that we have we have set up inequality. And I think on paper, everybody's like, let's go ahead and tackle that. But actually, implementation, it starts to crumble the sort of consensus across the board that this is an issue or this should be an issue that should be prioritized.
Well, that's right. And I think something that is true of when we set up a system, whether that's school funding, whether it's mortgage interest deduction, anything of that sort, when you set up a system and then later you realize that there were incredibly inequitable results from that system, it becomes very, very hard to change
right,
because
right.
people have become accustomed to feeling that it's their right to receive something, right?
Right.
And so Change is very, very hard, even when you're able to show factually that change would be in someone's best interest. We all don't operate. We operate a lot as human beings on emotion and fear, not so much on facts.
Well, what I love about the Metropolitan Planning Council work that you've done around this issue of segregation is that you can start to see government, City of Chicago, come up with some things that are addressing the issues that were laid out in some of the stuff that you guys have put out over the last past year. Let's get into that.
Okay.
The first one you have here is really planning and development, a new plan for the city, essentially.
Right. And, you know, this sounds it was pretty low key. It was kind of rolled out very quietly, but it's actually has pretty big implications. So this is a draft plan that the Department of Planning and Development at the city level has floated to say, when we review proposals for affordable housing development, we are now saying that we expect to get proposals that provide affordable housing across the entire city, and we're proactively seeking that. We are saying that we expect to see this across the board. The way that it's worked in the past has largely been that our affordable housing that's funded through the city has largely been on the south and west sides of the city, right? And that has some historical reasons, that those are the neighborhoods that traditionally had the strongest community development
right.
corporations. Those community development corporations were set up to fight the deindustrialization, disinvestment, racism. And so, of course, those groups are invested in building in those neighborhoods, and as well they should, and as those neighborhoods have benefited from that. And as someone who worked at one of those organizations in North Lawndale on the west side, hats off, and it's very important work. It just should not be the only place
right.
that we provide affordable housing. So with this move, the city has said we expect to see investment even in stronger markets where there may be more resistance, where there may be political resistance, as we've seen recently in other parts
of
the
right.
city.
Jefferson
and
Park, right.
That's right. And it may be harder to pull off financially because the land, you know, may be more
expensive.
Well, I was
going to say,
there's
always going to be pushback and political pushback we've talked about. And I do what we will get to residential pushback as
yeah.
well. But there's also development pushback in a certain way. The real estate community is like, we don't want to give up this area for affordable housing because we make money off of this stuff. The more the land is, the more we want to sell to people who can afford that land.
Right. And that's where I think it's important that we have some citywide goals in mind. Right. The city has said that when you need something from the city, if you need city land, city money, or a zoning change, then you are required to put some affordability on site. And there are some aldermen who have upped the ante on that and mm-hmm. said, you know, you can't just do 2.5% on site. You need to do the full 10% of these units on site because it matters in my neighborhood,
right?
Right? And that's where I think it's important that, in my mind, that's an important role of government, is to say it's not just what someone thinks should be on their block. It's not just what a developer wants to build. It's what do we need as a city in order to be a thriving place?
You know, Marisa Navarro is in studio. She's the director with the Metropolitan Planning Council. We're talking about some of the things that the City of Chicago has done to steps that have taken to desegregate the city, which has long been known to be one of the most segregated cities in America. We saw this next one. You know, it really kind of played out in the newspapers, but seven aldermen got together and said, we're on the hook for our neighborhoods and what we do for the affordable housing. This was kind of unprecedented for them to come together and say, we are committed to affordable housing. We're committed for our neighborhoods to be desegregated.
That's right. This was seven north and northwest side aldermen whose wards are not traditional powerhouses of affordability. And they spoke in really plain language. We were the only non-aldermanic entity to speak in that press conference. And they spoke in pretty clear language. They said, we understand that for far too long, aldermen on the north and northwest sides have done far too little to open our communities to low-income and minority families. And Chicago's history of racism has left a legacy of exclusion we must respond to today. And you know, I found that a pretty extraordinary level of self-responsibility
right.
and recognition of the need to be part of the solution. And I say that as someone, you know, as you noted, we've been working on the issue of segregation for quite a while now. And I can't tell you how many people in leadership positions during that time have said, you know what, addressing segregation is not my job. And so it's it's quite refreshing to have a group of people stand up and say, it is my job. It's not, I can't solve it all myself, but I can do some things and I need to pledge to do that.
And that moves right into the third one. And this is the story that we've been talking about on this show and on this radio station in Chicago for the last couple months in Jefferson Park, a push for an affordable housing unit or a building that would have affordable housing. And there has been residential pushback. And a lot of the old tropes about what, you know, bringing people of lower income to the neighborhood are going to bring. There's been a lot of pushback. The R word's been thrown around, racism and
yes,
and others. But there has been a push from the alderman there and others who've come to the aid of Alderman Arena to say, this is, we need to move forward even in the face of opposition.
That's right. And, you know, bottom line, there is nothing controversial about this proposed development. It's near transit. The city has a transit-oriented development ordinance that says we should build more densely near transit. That's what this does. The city also, as we just talked about, has said we need affordability throughout the entire city. That's what this project does. So it's actually meeting two goals the city has set for itself. I think one thing that's important, you know, I was at one of the zoning commission hearings on this, and many of the opponents said over and over, like, I'm not racist, I'm just anti-density. And I think it's really, really important for a city like Chicago to do some education on the issue of density. And I say that because we have a really unfortunate history with density, right? And affordable housing. We have done this very poorly. Over time, we have over-densified in an attempt to concentrate people of color in one space. So it came from a racist action.
Yeah, look down the highway. That's right. Dan Ryan, right.
And so people associate that with a very negative, basically a social experiment that failed. And I think one of the things we need to do as a city is to help people understand that, one, that was an extreme version. That we don't intend to repeat. And two, it also was a place that, you know, federal funds were cut. They stopped being maintained. They changed the income rules. I mean, a lot of things happened, conspired to make that absolutely not something we want to repeat. However, seven stories near transit in Jefferson Park is nowhere near the same thing.
The last one on there, which is an interesting one because it deals with schools, and schools are obviously a big part of when you talk about desegregating Chicago schools. The city of Chicago has done selective enrollment and other things to make sure that we're not just having a center of neighborhood schools where one school doesn't have anything and then a more affluent neighborhood gets everything. There's been different experiments throughout the last couple decades in changing the way we do schools. But this recent news of a recent merge between Ogden and Jenner was one that you see as moving in the right direction.
I do. It's two
Another
schools.
Controversial thing, but go ahead.
It did, and it took quite a while, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And you know, to put in context, it is two schools, right, out of a district with over 600 schools. But I think symbols matter. I think steps matter. I think the symbol that this the signal that this sends really matters, in the sense we had one school in Ogden that is much higher income and pretty crowded. And nearby, you had Jenner School, which traditionally served young people from Cabrini Green. And with those, you know, much of that being torn down, the school was quite underutilized. And so the idea was to bring the two schools together, and the principals were around this, and many parents were around it, but many quite clearly were not for this merger. And so I think there a very important conversation played out. And I was at one of the hearings about this and testified, and I think there is a really important thing to understand here about kind of how we think about our spaces. Mm-hmm. Parents who were against the merger, who certainly saw this as kind of a question of, what do I get for my property taxes? And I pay very high property taxes, so I merit a school like Ogden.
Right.
And, you know, that's a pretty hard thing to wrap your head around when you're all part of one school district.
Well, there's so many issues to unpack. I mean, especially when you talk about pushback, residential pushback, and what stands in the way of desegregating a major city, one that historically has been segregated. And we'll continue that conversation. Marisa Navarro is the director with the Metropolitan Planning Council. They've undertaken a lot of this research and work to not only find out what the cost of segregation is, but what we can do to desegregate. Marisa, thanks so much for being my guest tonight. And you got to come back and we'll continue the conversation.
Thanks. Great talking with you.